Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We have a lot of things that we're going to eliminate and permanently eliminate. You know, one of the things that we have is some advantage, you could say. But because of the shutdown, which I think they made a big mistake, we're able to take out billions and billions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse.
As the government shutdown enters its second week, the Trump administration's threatening not to pay furloughed federal workers as shortages of air traffic controllers are leading to flight delays across the country. We'll speak to Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna about the shutdown and its push to secure the full release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. We'll also talk to Congressmember-elect Adelita Grijalva of Arizona. 2 weeks ago, she won a special election, but House Speaker Mike Johnson has refused to swear her in. She says it's because of the Epstein files.
A lot of talk about me being the 218th signer for the discharge petition for the Epstein files, which I will do as soon as I'm sworn in. The timing is very suspect.
Then we look at the growing media empire of billionaire Trump ally Larry Ellison and his son David, who heads the newly formed Paramount Skydance. David Ellison has just installed Barry Weiss as the new head of CBS News in what's been described as a right-wing takeover of the network. Then Stripped for Parts, American Journalism on the Brink. A new PBS documentary looks at how hedge funds are plundering newspapers.
Newspapers are not just any other business. They are the only private industry specifically named in the Bill of Rights.
History will not judge us kindly. If one day we wake up to realize we failed to protect our community's right to know, and in turn, our very democracy.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces have killed 8 Palestinians across Gaza in the past 24 hours, according to Gaza's health ministry. At least 118 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli attacks on Gaza since Friday, when Trump called on Israel to halt its strikes. This is Ibrahim Deeb, a displaced Palestinian from Jabalia.
This is a genocide, a humanitarian extermination. We are suffering during this current war from poverty, famine, displacement, and all types of things that disgust human beings. You look at people now, those alive are just like those dead, just because of war.
Meanwhile, Israel's far-right national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, prayed at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Jerusalem today. Hamas condemned Ben-Gvir's visit as deliberately provocative.
We are 2 years after the terrible massacre here on the Temple Mount, where there is victory. Every house in Gaza has a picture of the Temple Mount. And today, 2 years later, we are winning on the Temple Mount. We are the owners of the Temple Mount.
Trump's special Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner are attending the Gaza ceasefire talks in Egypt today. Hamas and Israel are holding indirect negotiations based on President Trump's proposed 20-point plan. Qatar's Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani and Turkey's intelligence chief Ibrahim Kalin are also set to attend the talks. A senior Hamas official told Reuters Hamas negotiators in Israel have exchanged lists of prisoners and hostages who would be released if a ceasefire deal is reached. Here's Qatar's foreign ministry spokesperson, Majid al-Ansari.
Now it's early to talk about any alternatives to any plan. We're talking about implementing this plan, Trump's plan, and applying this plan. All parties have agreed to this plan, so there are no obstacles now in terms of agreeing to the 20 points contained in President Trump's plan. The obstacles now are in implementation.
Israeli forces intercepted another Gaza-bound humanitarian aid flotilla Tuesday. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition and 1,000 Madleens to Gaza are operating a new fleet of 11 vessels with 150 people on board, including doctors, and initially said three boats were attacked 120 nautical miles off the coast of Gaza. Soon after, all boats were intercepted by Israel. In a statement, the group said, quote, "Sources so far indicate the unarmed crew aboard, including doctors, journalists, and elected officials, have been abducted, as well as the vital aid worth over $110,000 in medicines, respiratory equipment, and nutritional supplies that were destined for Gaza's starving hospitals. Their whereabouts remain unknown," they said. The U.S. government shutdown has entered its eighth day. A draft memo is reportedly circulating in the White House stating hundreds of thousands of workers who've been furloughed due to the government shutdown may not automatically receive their back pay once the government reopens. The memo reportedly states Congress must approve new funding for the workers to get paid. Speaking to reporters yesterday, President Trump again threatened to use the shutdown to implement mass firings and cut public programs.
You know, one of the things that we have is some advantage, you could say, but because of the shutdown, which I think they made a big mistake, we're able to take out billions and billions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse, and they've handed it, you know, to on a silver platter. And you know, Russell Vogt, he's a serious person, very serious person, and he's sitting there and he's getting ready to cut things.
Meanwhile, the Federal Aviation Administration warned of staffing shortages at airports in Nashville, Boston, Dallas, Chicago, Philadelphia, and air traffic control centers in Atlanta, Houston, and the Dallas-Fort Worth area. At Burbank area in California Airport, the air traffic control tower went unmanned for hours. Union leaders for air traffic controllers and airport security screeners said the situation will worsen as the shutdown drags on. Hundreds of National Guard troops from Texas have arrived in Chicago as President Trump escalates his crackdown. Trump has labeled Chicago a war zone, referring to the growing protests in opposition to his mass immigration raid. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson this week signed an executive order banning ICE agents from using city-owned property such as parking lots as staging grounds for agency raids. The American Civil Liberties Union is accusing the Trump administration of intentionally subjecting immigrants to inhumane conditions at the notorious Louisiana prison known as Angola, a former slave plantation that's recently been used to incarcerate immigrants and asylum seekers. A lawsuit filed by the ACLU Monday argues detainees are being punished for crimes for a second time in violation of the Double Jeopardy Clause because the government failed to deport them within 6 months of a removal order. In their petition, ACLU lawyers write, quote, "The anti-immigrant campaign under the guise of making America safe again does not remotely outweigh or justify indefinite detention in America's bloodiest prison without any of the rights afforded to criminal defendants," unquote. An investigation by Wired magazines revealed ICE is bolstering its social media surveillance nationwide. Federal records show ICE is looking to hire more contractors in the state of Vermont to expand its so-called National Criminal Analysis and Targeting Center, located inside a largely unmarked property in Williston. The surveillance center is similar to another ICE facility in Santa Ana, California. Contractors will reportedly have the ability to collect personal data from Facebook, Instagram, and X of immigrants targeted by ICE, as well as their family members, co-workers, and other associates. Earlier this year, ICE signed a multi-million dollar contract with the controversial surveillance tech giant Palantir to track and deport immigrants. That agreement was an extension of a contract with Palantir first signed by the Biden administration. Attorney General Pam Bondi testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee Tuesday, sparring with Democrats who accused her of doing President Trump's bidding and weaponizing the Justice Department to go after his opponents. She was also questioned on National Guard deployments and the Epstein files.
Something else. There's been public reporting that Jeffrey Epstein showed people photos of President Trump with half-naked young women. Do you know if the FBI found those photographs in their search of Jeffrey Epstein's safe or premises or otherwise? Have you seen any such thing?
You know, Senator Whitehouse, you sit here and make salacious remarks, once again trying to slander President Trump left and right, when you're the one who was taking money from one of Epstein's closest confidants, I believe, I could be wrong, correct me, Reid Hoffman, who was with Jeffrey Epstein on multiple occasions. And the senator sitting right next to you tried to block the flight logs from being released. Yet you're grilling me on President Trump and some photograph with Epstein? Come on.
Former FBI Director James Comey is set to appear in federal court to be arraigned today. He's facing two criminal charges, which include making a false statement to Congress and the obstruction of a congressional proceeding. Comey will be booked and fingerprinted at the federal courthouse in Alexandria, Virginia. Comes as an FBI agent was reportedly suspended after he refused to organize a perp walk of Comey into the courthouse before the media. The U.S. Supreme Court seemed poised in favor of removing Colorado's ban on LGBTQ plus conversion therapy for minors during oral arguments Tuesday. The challenge to Colorado's ban was brought forward by a Christian licensed counselor, Kaylee Charles, who argued the ban is a violation of her First Amendment rights to free speech and religion. Meanwhile, Colorado Solicitor General Shannon Stevenson argued Colorado's law regulates conduct, not speech. Here's Stevenson in court yesterday.
People have been trying to do conversion therapy for 100 years with no record of success. There is no study, despite the fact that people tried to advance this practice, that has ever shown that it has any chance of being efficacious.
Politico reports the Trump administration's considering options to privatize some $1.6 trillion in federal student loan debt. Officials with the Education Department and Treasury Department have reportedly been looking for private buyers to sell off a massive portion of the federal government student loan debt portfolio currently owed by an estimated 45 million people in the United States. The move would raise legal concerns and could further erode protections for borrowers as advocates continue to demand student loan cancellation. California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a law aimed at combating anti-Semitism in schools, a move many educators have warned could lead to censorship and the targeting of pro-Palestine voices. Legislation would create an Office of Civil Rights that'll provide training to school staff to identify what they believe is anti-Semitism. In a statement to the Associated Press, Teresa Montano with the California Faculty Association said, quote, teacher discourse on Palestine or the genocide in Gaza will be police misrepresented and reported to the anti-Semitism coordinator, unquote. Johnson & Johnson has been ordered to pay $966 million, close to $1 billion, to the family of a California woman who died of mesothelioma. A Los Angeles jury found Johnson & Johnson liable for the 2021 death of Mae Moore. She developed the rare cancer after years of using the company's talcum-based baby powder, which was contaminated with asbestos, a known carcinogen. This is the latest lawsuit amidst mounting litigation against Johnson & Johnson and comes just months after a federal judge rejected the company's attempt to settle all current and future lawsuits involving its baby powder by filing for bankruptcy. And Missouri's attorney general subpoenaed Planned Parenthood in an effort to obtain medical and other confidential records of abortion patients. Planned Parenthood Great Plains, Planned Parenthood Great Rivers, and the ACLU of Missouri have said in response, quote, politicians have no place in the exam room with patients and their medical providers, and that's why we'll keep fighting for patients and their rights, unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we go to Capitol Hill to speak with California Congressmember Ro Khanna about the government shutdown. We'll also speak with a Congressmember-elect, Grijalva, about why she hasn't been sworn in despite being elected weeks ago. Stay with us.
He was her only child, her baby boy. She was his second daughter, her father's pride and joy. Somebody's mother, brother, best friend, sister, lover. Maybe an A1 student running, hiding, taking cover. The women gather crying, tears that fill a million oceans. It doesn't matter where you're living. The women gather crying, tears that fill a million oceans.
People say, not in this neighborhood, it doesn't happen here. Our kids have everything.
What do we have to fear?
Women gather by Sweet Honey in the Rock, back in the days of our Democracy Now! Firehouse studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The U.S. government shutdown's entered its second week. A draft memo is circulating in the White House stating hundreds of thousands of workers who've been furloughed due to the government shutdown may not automatically receive their pay once the government reopens. The memo reportedly claims Congress must approve new funding for the workers to get paid despite a 2019 law requiring furloughed workers be paid. On Tuesday, Trump said some workers, quote, don't deserve to be taken care of. Meanwhile, the Federal Aviation Administration's warned of staffing shortages at numerous airports. Union leaders for air traffic controllers and airport security screeners said the situation is due to get worse as the shutdown drags on. Democratic lawmakers are holding to their demands that Republicans agree to extend health care subsidies from the Affordable Care Act and reverse cuts to Medicaid. Earlier this week, Republican Congress member Marjorie Taylor Greene made headlines for breaking with the GOP on health care costs. She wrote online, quote, I'm going to go against everyone on this issue because when the tax credits expire this year, my own adult children's insurance premiums for 2026 are going to double, along with all the wonderful families and hardworking people in my district, she said. She went on to write, I'm absolutely disgusted that health insurance premiums will double if the tax credits expire this year, unquote. We go now to Capitol Hill, where we're joined by Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna of California. Let's begin there. If you can go back to why there is a government shutdown and what the Democrats are demanding.
First of all, Amy, the Republicans could open government today. They have the majority in the Senate. They have the majority in the House. They have the presidency. They have passed and approved Trump's presidential appointees on a 51 vote in the Senate. They have approved Trump's judges on a 51 vote in the Senate. Then why can't we have a 51 vote filibuster exception to keep government open? I have been consistent in advocating for the filibuster to be done away with. So the idea that they're blaming Democrats is absurd, and no one believes it. If they want Democratic votes, then they need to make sure that health care premiums don't double for ordinary Americans. I mean, the reality is that the Affordable Care Act tax credits expire, and that's going to mean health care premiums for 24 million Americans literally double.
And Ro Khanna, this threat of President Trump to not pay furloughed workers, could you talk about that, the legality of that?
To not pay, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the phrase, to not pay for...
The threat of President Trump to possibly not pay the back pay for furloughed workers?
Oh, yes. Well, yes. I mean, look, Trump is threatening to lay off workers illegally. He's threatening not to pay back pay for hardworking folks who are keeping our airports running, who are in our parks and keeping our parks operational. This has never happened before in modern times in a shutdown. We always pay our troops. We always pay essential workers. And Trump is threatening both to lay them off illegally and not to pay them. By the way, Johnson hasn't called Congress in session to pay our troops. And the reason he hasn't called Congress in session is because he's so afraid of swearing in Adelita Grijalva, who's going to be on your program. And the reason is Adelita Grijalva would be the 218th signature on my and Thomas Massie's discharge petition for the release of the Epstein files. So instead of paying our troops, instead of trying to vote to get government open, Johnson has just said, no votes, go home. We don't want to have anything to do with the Epstein files.
Member Khanna, I want to go right now to another guest to join you. From Tucson, Arizona, Democrat Adelita Grijalva of Arizona won a special election 2 weeks ago in Arizona's 7th Congressional District. She'll replace her late father, former Congressmember Raul Grijalva, in Congress. After she's sworn in, Grijalva is expected to become the 218th vote needed to force the Justice Department to release more of its files on the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. On Tuesday, CNN's Manu Raju questioned House Speaker Mike Johnson about why she hasn't been sworn in.
Earlier this year, you swore in two Republican members during a pro-forma session. So why not swear in Adelita Grijalva, who was elected 2 weeks ago during a pro-forma session? Does it have to do with her 218th signature on the discharge petition, the Epstein discharge petition?
No, it has nothing to do with that at all. We will swear her in when everybody gets back. It's a ceremonial duty. We'll schedule it, I guess, as soon as she wants.
As soon as she wants. So why don't we ask her, when does she want to be sworn in? We go now to Tucson to speak with Adelita Grijalva, the Congressmember-elect from Arizona. Well, you heard the House Speaker. What's the issue?
Yesterday would have been a good day to get sworn in. Last week, when I was on the House floor, would have been a great time to get sworn in. The issue is that Speaker Johnson is just refusing to acknowledge the fact that I am waiting in the wings to get sworn in. Arizonans need a voice in Congress, and I want to be able to advocate for the community here. He has set up, this speaker set a precedent in the last three specials to swear people in under 24 hours from the time of their election. And now we're working on day 14 that I've been duly elected and ready to work.
So you've said that the first thing you're going to do is sign the discharge petition around the Epstein files. Can you explain what that is and why this is important to you?
Yeah. So much of the push during the presidential race had to do with transparency. And like, you know, we needed to get these Epstein files out. And then as soon as this administration is in office, all of a sudden there's, you know, there's nothing to see here. And the American people want to know what is in those files, who's implicated, and the victims need an opportunity for justice and a voice. And they will be at the Capitol today, many of the victims talking about why it's important for them to be able to be seen and those that perpetrated crimes to have consequences.
And Representative-elect, in this period when you're essentially in limbo here as a result of Johnson's decision, what have you been able to do to represent your constituents?
I can't represent my constituents. I am an elect. I have no budget, no office, no staff. I have been as active as I can be in accepting offers to speak on the issue. I have supported my colleagues, our Hispanic chamber, our mayors from 8 mayors from this community have all communicated to Speaker Johnson, like, swear her in. I was in D.C. ready to be sworn in. And now it seems that, you know, if you don't agree with the politics of Speaker Johnson, this is an incredibly scary precedent to set. If you don't agree with the politics of the speaker, then they can keep you out of your duly elected office.
I want to go to talk about precedent. Earlier this year, House Speaker Mike Johnson swore in Republican Congress members Jimmy Patronis and Randy Fine a day after this, after their election, even before official results were in. This is Florida Congressmember Mario Diaz-Balart.
I ask unanimous consent that the gentleman from Florida, the Honorable Randy Fine, and the gentleman from Florida, the Honorable Jimmy Patronis, be permitted to take the oath of office today. Their certificates of election have not arrived, but there is no contest and no question has been raised with regard to their elections, Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, will Representatives-elect Fine and Patronis and members of the Florida delegation present themselves in the well? As all members rise and the representatives-elect, will you please raise your right hand?
Even before The results were in. These two Florida Republican Congress members were sworn in. Let's bring Ro Khanna back into this conversation. Now House Speaker Johnson is saying not until the shutdown is done. Have we ever seen a precedent for this? It's not about as much Adelita Grijalva's rights as her constituents' rights to be represented. And if you can talk about this discharge position, bill that would that you have put forward with the Republican Congressmember Massey and what it would mean.
Well, it's really shameful. I'm sorry that we've caused all this trouble for Adelita Grijalva. She should just be sworn in. But the reality is Thomas Massie and I had a press conference scheduled this week. The survivors were going to fly in. We all assumed that Adelita was going to be sworn in on Tuesday, was going to be the 218th signature. And what happened? Well, they didn't want that. They knew that if she was sworn in, that we would then trigger a vote. You would have a vote within 7 legislative days. The survivors were coming on the Capitol. That would get national attention again. The reality is you'd probably have 50 to 60 Republicans on the floor vote for the full release of the files. So what has the speaker done and the Republican leadership done? They have refused to swear in someone who won her election basically 70% to 30%. They're denying a district in Arizona of representation, and they're not having us vote on anything in Congress, including paying our troops. Now, I just want to say Adelita Grijalva is extraordinary. I served with her father, Raul Grijalva, who was one of the great progressives, and I can't wait to work with her when she does get sworn in. But she needs to get sworn in today, tomorrow. I mean, every day is breaking precedent and depriving people of who they voted for.
And Adelita Grijalva, Ro Khanna mentioned your father. He was a longtime co-chair of the Progressive Caucus. Our condolences on his death earlier this year from complications from his cancer treatment. Could you talk some about his legacy and what he meant to you and to the people of Arizona, especially the border region around Tucson?
Well, my dad was an unapologetic progressive and voice for Southern Arizona. He was the conscience of many communities, indigenous, migrant, working families, our environment, those that cannot speak for themselves, had a voice with my father. And so much of what he did and the advocacy that he pushed for was about transparency and about standing up for those who can't. And so we cannot, this administration is just ignoring the will of the people in general, sending in troops into communities that are not asking for the assistance, just completely trampling our rights. And this is something, this oath is incredibly important. And it's important for the community here to be able to have a voice. It's also important for me to be able to hire staff and open a constituent office. So the question was, what are you doing? The frustration is, I can't do my job until Johnson does his job.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the Trump administration's attack on immigrants across the country, what you're hoping to do in Congress to beat that back, and also his attempts to squash any diversity, equity, and inclusion teachings in the public schools. You were on Tucson Unified School District and the Pima County Board of Supervisors back when there were attempts to squash Mexican-American studies and bilingual curriculums in Arizona?
Yes. So I was on the school board for 20 years. And during that time, we had a fight with our state superintendent of public instruction to eliminate Mexican-American studies. We had African-American studies, Native American studies. And I think it's important to be inclusive of our communities and our people's history and their contributions to the fabric of this nation. And so the attacks on DEI, I never thought that I would be in this twilight zone where diversity, equity, and inclusion were said as bad words. It is what opens the doors of opportunity for many people like myself. And without fighters like my dad pushing to be, to have access to higher education at the University of Arizona during the Chicano movement, I would never have this opportunity. And so it's important for us, those of us that have been given the privilege and access, to make sure that that door stays open for us.